Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, November 12th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here. My apologies for not being able to make yesterday's show, but fortunately, the search party I sent out was able to find my voice. So we're good to go here today. We should be good to go here for the rest of the week on Bang the Book Radio. And we will be trying to get Kyle Hunter on the show here hopefully tomorrow. I know he's got some obligations and some things going on. Hopefully tomorrow, but we're going to do something to get his segments on the air here this week. So make sure you keep it tuned right here for those. In any event here today on this Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, I'll be joined by Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We're going to do some NFL, some NHL, and a little bit of golf with you here today. Then in the second half of today's show, professional handicapper Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com will join me. We'll talk college football. We'll talk college basketball. A lot of good stuff coming your way here on today's program. A lot of good stuff over at BangTheBook.com already for this week as well. My college football power ratings have been posted. Situational spots to consider for college basketball, college football, the NHL, and the NBA. Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks over there as well. How to bet game previews for college basketball and the NBA. A lot of good stuff going on. Very, very busy time of year. Make sure you head on over to bangthebook.com and check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the Tuesday program here today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Well, my friend, I'm doing well, and I know you're sitting there enjoying a little lake effect snow, which I've experienced for many, many a year, so I know what you're going through.
Yeah, enjoying. Yeah, that's the right word to use.
The glass is half full.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, the glass is half full with bourbon or brandy or something that actually keeps you warm here at this time of the year.
But, hey, the weather now becomes a thing. I mean, absolutely, in a lot of these football games.
Yeah, it definitely does. That's an excellent point. And, of course, we're going to talk about a game where weather could be a factor on Thursday night between the Steelers and the Browns, where it's probably going to be bitter cold in Cleveland, which, you know, I mean, I guess it's – I want to say it's that time of year, but it's also mid-November, so this is bullshit. It's not that time of the year yet. But in any event, as we take a look back here at what happened in week 10, Brian, what were some of your takeaways from this past weekend in the NFL?
Well, it's just another goofball week. I mean, the Monday night game was a spectacular football game. That was absolutely awesome. And the crazy thing is Russell Wilson throwing that pick after all the incredible plays he made to win the game. And then he throws that pick. You're like, wow, how did that happen? And then the kid butchers the game-winning field goal. And, you know, those announcers, are you kidding me? Oh, the moment was too big for him. The kid drilled a 47-yarder to tie it. I mean, he missed it. He missed it badly. But that was a great football game. But we talked about this last week on the podcast. And Seattle was looking at that. You know, we do this all the time in the NHL, the NBA. Scheduling situations mean so much. But you're sitting there, Seattle, two games behind the Niners, the weight of expectations of being an unbeaten team. But Seattle's sitting there going, yeah, it's all well and good, but Seattle's two games behind them. That was a playoff game for Seattle. And they're catching 6.5 points. Are you serious? Now, Seattle, they control their destiny because they get the Niners again at home, and they win the division. I mean, if Seattle lost that game last night, probably not so much if they tied. They still would have had a chance. I was a little curious. I thought Carroll might go for it around midfield on 4th-and-3 or 4th-and-4 to win in overtime. He did the right thing. He punted. He got it back. They won the game. But, you know, Seattle literally is right there with a real opportunity now to win this division. Pittsburgh is back in the wild card race. Certain losses brought a lot of teams back into the equation. The Bills loss at Cleveland. Don't even get me going on that. But that brings Pittsburgh really right back to the equation. Now, they play Cleveland here on Thursday night, but they play the Bills down the road. So that's the one thing we do when, you know, in sports betting, you know, you got to turn the page. And but we're always in look ahead mode. And that's the other thing. The coaches, the kickers. What is going on with the kickers? I'm telling some of my friends out here, the sportsbook directors, get on with it. People will bet this. Make a prop over under 3.5 extra points missed on a Sunday. It's insane. And the Vinatieri thing's got to end. You know, that's reached a point of being sad.
Yeah, it really has. It's one of those things where a guy just hangs on way too long and just, you know, you forget all the great moments of his career because now all of a sudden he's remembered for the end of it where, you know, it's just been an outright disaster.
Well, he's a Hall of Famer, right? I mean, I honestly, he's a Hall of Famer, but he's not going out in style.
No, definitely not. You know, it's funny, though, too, because we get that really good Monday night game. We've been dying for a really good Monday night game. Injuries haven't played, you know, the greatest role in terms of the Monday night games, but we've been dying for a good one. And we get it, and then the end of that game was a disaster. I mean, I would have went for it if I was Pete Carroll. I would have played for the tie if I'm Kyle Shanahan. I run the football on that last possession. Because a tie, you just talked about it. It was a must-win game for Seattle. A tie in terms of the division is almost as good as a win there. Because, you know, yeah, you've got the one head-to-head meeting down the line. But, man, you're probably not going to score there. Garoppolo's not exactly been lighting it on fire this season. The San Francisco defense has really carried them to where they are, not to mention the schedule.
How many interceptions did Seattle drop, too? I mean, that was insane. I don't know, pal. I mean, a lot of this stuff, you shake your head. The AFC South, throw a blanket over them. You know, Jacksonville beats Indy. And if Baltimore beats Houston, there you go. We talked about that in the summer months. I think they're all really decent teams. I don't think anybody set your hair on fire, but they're a team that can beat anybody on a given day. How about what Tannehill's doing with Tennessee? Kansas City is flawed. Are the Raiders for real? You just go around a league and there's some really intriguing things. You know, the other thing, that game last night, Seattle was the side, but that game was Seattle in the under. You know, I mean, they got the game there in complete control of the game, and Russell Wilson, believe me, he's amazing, MVP season. But they're in control of that game, and he runs backwards 15 yards and fumbles the ball, and San Francisco gets a touchdown. I mean, Seattle had that game in the cookie jar, and they let the Niners back in, and unfortunately for them, they couldn't kick the door down. I mean, Seattle did try to gift wrap it for him a bunch of times.
Well, and one other thing I will say here, and then we'll start looking ahead at some Week 11 games. You know, I was on Atlanta. I talked up Atlanta in the Super Contest. You know, it sucks you only get 1 point for a winner there because, I mean, they win the game outright as a 2-touchdown dog. But we talked about it. On the bye week, everything went ideally for New Orleans. You know, they get a bye week. They get a chance to rest. Minnesota loses. Green Bay loses. You know, things looked really good for them. Then all of a sudden, they lose to Atlanta. Green Bay wins. Minnesota wins on Sunday night, and Kirk Cousins played pretty well out there on the road against an okay Dallas defense. So now all of a sudden, the gains for New Orleans on the bye week are completely gone because of that surprising loss to Atlanta, and then Green Bay and Minnesota taking care of their affairs. The Rams lose again. They won't be a factor here the rest of the way. It's very interesting to look at the NFC playoff picture up and down. I know we talk a lot about the AFC, but the NFC one now is very crazy and very up for grabs with San Francisco playing at New Orleans, also playing at Seattle. A lot of interesting things going forward here. And again, the problem is, much like in college football for the most part this year, everybody seems capable of beating everybody. So there's a lot of uncertainty week in and week out.
Well, I was talking to a buddy of mine. He's a diehard Cowboys fan. And I said, well, you're watching that Monday night game. You better be rooting for the Niners like your lungs depend on it, because that basically renders the NFC East to the division winner only, I believe. You know, so if you said San Fran or Seattle, and then you know, Green Bay or Minnesota, one of them is the wild card, and the other one is, I am absolutely befuddled, and they have played this way every game since the Super Bowl. I mean, Rams totals were in the low 50s last year as the norm. And the play calling by the Rams has been an atrocity. They refuse. Now, it's a combination of they can't or they refuse to run the football. All right, if Gurley's not the guy, fine. Then give it to the Henderson kid. Maybe there's just no holes there. But and then you get to the point where you know, it's fourth and two, and you know, first down to you know, have your shot to win the game, and you decide that a punter throwing the pass is the best option. What the hell is going on with the Rams?
I don't know. You know, I wonder if that's one of those scenarios where everyone's trying to go the Sean McVay route. So maybe Sean McVay is trying to be too cute. He's trying to do too much to separate himself from what everybody else is doing, and it's getting him in trouble. Maybe that's kind of part of it. And also, too, this is something that's been talked about a lot around the NFL. With so many teams going the Sean McVay route or going, you know, the Andy Reid, Doug Peterson type route, these defenses don't have to prepare for a whole lot other than, you know, those two schemes. So Sean McVay is almost at a disadvantage week in and week out because all of these opposing defenses are game planning for elements of his scheme, no matter who they play.
Yeah, well, and you saw that on the Monday night game. I mean, Seattle literally said, I got news for you. You know, Coleman, Breida, and Mostert aren't going to beat us. You know, we're making Garoppolo beat us. He had his good moments, but he had some pretty horrific moments, too. So, you know, Pete Carroll kind of went Belichick last night, right? He said, we're taking the running game away from you. That's their bread and butter, and got it to the point where they hung around and won the game.
All right, so we go to Thursday Night Football here, Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Browns a 2.5-point favorite. This line sets up very similarly to what we saw in Sunday's game against Buffalo, which I think is pretty interesting, given that the Browns did get that win, although they wound up pushing the number. Steelers, sharp versus public split. They come away with the outright win, even though the public money and even some late sharp money came in on the Rams there in that one. What do you do here on a short week with this division game, Brian?
Well, Thursday night, road trip, pain in the butt, blah, blah, blah. Does Pittsburgh even fly there? Yeah, I guess they do with the snow. But, I mean, the travel's nothing. The wrong team's favorite here. Cleveland had a good opening drive and a good drive in the fourth quarter. Other than that, their short yardage is a disaster. They had first and goal on 8 straight plays. First and goal from the 1. They get 3 kicks at it, don't get it in, get an interference call on 4th down, get another set of first and goal at the 1, and don't get it in. And the Bills are a batch of idiots. At the end of that game, Allen's driving them down the field. They had the defense on the run. They throw a swing pass. I don't know how Singletary didn't get out of bounds, but there's 50 seconds left, and the Bills huddle up. And, like, what are you doing? You had them on the run. Keep going. And literally, you let the Browns catch their breath. And so basically they were saying they were content to go and get the game-tying field goal. But wait a minute. Hausch had already missed a chip shot, and then they get to give him a 52-yarder to, you know, tie the game. The Bills beat themselves in this game. Pittsburgh is playing so hard right now. Cleveland is, I don't know, man. I'm watching these guys. I don't know. There's too many. I watch it, buddy. It's too many me guys. And they are going to have good games, and they're going to have horrific games. But Tomlin's got Pittsburgh flying around. And, you know, again, you got Rudolph on the road. The weather, you know, under 40 seems compelling to me, but I'm not going to go any further than I think the wrong team's favored.
Yeah, I have truly no idea what to do with this game outside of teasing Pittsburgh up through the 7 to 8, 8.5. You know, I mean, that's the way that I'm going to look at it here. And then I'm going to find another teaser play, maybe the Jets against Washington, because Dwayne Haskins getting the start now for the rest of the season. That'll be a low totaled game as well. So I think the Steelers and the Jets on a 2-team teaser, probably the best way to wind up playing this Thursday night game. I see what you're saying about the wrong team favorite. I think that that's probably fair. Again, it's one of those situations, and I talked about this last week, it's like a Florida State in college football or somebody like that where you have to respect the talent level even if the team just isn't very good. And now the Browns, new wrinkle with Kareem Hunt, the two-back setup seemed to work really well for them, got Chubb a lot of yardage, they threw some swing passes to Hunt, let him run the ball a little bit. That seemed to work really well. We'll see how it works against the Pittsburgh team. It's very fast on the defensive side, as you mentioned. And again, they tried to force Odell. He had some drops, didn't play particularly well. Jarvis Landry looked better. I don't think there's anything I could do with this game, though, other than take the easy way out and tease Pittsburgh up and just kind of watch it from some warm bar as opposed to freezing my ass off in the stands.
Yeah, I just play Pittsburgh on the money line. You know, and the other thing was, you know, Mayfield made those two throws. The two throws a game he makes. He made Trey White, who did a terrific job against Beckham. And that was the thing, because, you know, Beckham would get a little, but not a lot. And Landry, you know, he made one throw that was in a, you know, a great catch. It was a great throw, and the guy was blanket coverage. Landry made the catch. But Mayfield made a couple of throws that would have been picks. And I got news for you. The way the Steelers are going right now, he makes those two throws in this game, those are defensive touchdowns.
Yeah, that's the one thing. I mean, there were some good things from Baker, finally. And he didn't have a whole lot of time to throw. The offensive line did not play well for Cleveland at all whatsoever. That could be a factor here against Pittsburgh as well, who, as good as the Buffalo defense is, they generally don't rush the passer particularly well.
Bingo.
Pittsburgh does, though. So yes, that would be a worry here for the Browns in this one. Should be a good atmosphere. We'll see what happens there in Cleveland. And, you know, even though the team is 3-6, still a lot of support, a lot of, you know, happy Browns fans at the end of that game last week, despite, you know, the first and goal 8 times, you know, that they you mentioned earlier on in the segment. So we'll see what happens here. But man,
as a Bills fan, I'm rooting for Cleveland. My wallet says you got to bet Pittsburgh.
All right. Fair enough. I think that's a fair way to look at it there. All right, so we go to game 463-464 here on Sunday afternoon. Buffalo and Miami. And Miami taking the early money here in this one. This one's actually gotten as low as 5 in the offshore market out at Bookmaker. Most places still 5.5 on this one. But keep in mind here, if you flip home field, you basically got Buffalo -11, -11.5. This was Buffalo -17 just a few weeks ago. So obvious adjustments having been made in the market.
And you just nailed it. Don't flip the home field. This is a home game for Buffalo. There will be 30,000 Bills fans there. It happens every year. I covered the Bills for 14 years. Go down to Joe Robbie Stadium at the time. I was there. I can't tell you how many times I was down there. The one game's a Monday night game. And the 20,000 Dolphins fans are outside tailgating. The Dolphins would walk on the field with 30,000 Bill fans in the stadium chanting, "Let's go Buffalo," while the Dolphins are warming up on their home field. This is a home game for Buffalo. It's the hidden nugget of every and this happens when all the teams go down there because the indifferent. If the Dolphins aren't 7-2, their fans don't go to the games. All right? This is – and you're sitting here talking about lake effect snow. You're telling me that, you know, half of the suburbs of Buffalo didn't book tickets down to South Beach to go down, have a weekend in the sun, and catch the Bills. This is a home game for the Bills, and they have played down to the competition. The one thing is the total. I don't understand the total. The total's 40. They played the first game. The score was 31-21. All right. Now, there was the return of the onside kick in that game, but Fitzpatrick will have some moments in this game. Fitzpatrick will make some bonehead plays. And I Buffalo needs a get-right game. And this is, they've got Miami, then they've got Denver. I mean, the Cleveland game was a monstrosity because there was a real chance for them to get to 9-2 and put it to bed. The back end of their schedule is pretty tough. Give Miami marks. They're playing hard. You know, I get it. But listen. The hidden nugget is that this is a home game for the Bills.
What worries me about this one, and what really worries me in any game where Buffalo is a decent favorite, is are they able to get margin? You know, Josh Allen here on the year, and this was a great stat that came from Matthew Fairburn over at The Athletic. Josh Allen, 0-16 on passes of 30-plus yards in the air and a 36.4 passer rating on passes that are 20-plus yards. So it is hard for them to move down the football field. They do not get a lot of chunk plays. So trying to ask them to cover, you know, essentially a touchdown here on the road, that's what concerns me a little bit. And again, I agree with you about the home field advantage angle. Buffalo will be very well represented, much like they were in Cleveland this past weekend. But that's what concerns me, is that they're not really built on explosive plays. They ask a lot of that defense. Fitzpatrick and the Dolphins improving here. But again, anytime you get a team that's looked as bad as the Dolphins have for, you know, 8 of the 10 weeks of the season, anytime you get that team starting to get some public support, maybe it's time to go against them. I'm not as not as bullish as you on Buffalo this week, but I understand where you're coming from.
Well, I sometimes we, you know, and maybe they're not that good. Maybe they're not. But I think sometimes we overthink this. I don't think there's a doubt who the better football team is. I don't think it's at all in question. And again, I think it's one of these games. And you're right. There has to come a day. This defense, week in, week out, week in, week out, has to carry the mail. There's got to be a game where the Bills' offense just puts it together. The play calling is by DeBoll in Buffalo is starting to become really annoying. Use the Singletary kid. Get him the ball in space. Hey, give him 15 carries a game, but little swing passes to this kid. And they do move the chains with Beasley. They don't have the big wide receiver. The Duke Williams guy kind of been out of the lineup to give him the red zone, the bigger mismatch. By a mile, I do believe the Bills are the better team, and they will have fan support there. And at some point, the memo's got to get down to Miami. Good on these guys for playing hard and everybody. Hey, fellas, we've been trying to lose these games. Now, I like the Bills. I very much like the Bills in this spot.
Well, two teams that are not trying to lose at
and,
all.
And I don't. And by the way, buddy, I don't. Last week, you asked me about the Cleveland game. But what did I tell you? I said I ain't going anywhere near it. Said the number's right where it should be. The game scared the heck out of me. It's not a blind. Believe me, my heart's with Buffalo. My wallet is not always with Buffalo, but it's with them this week.
No, that's perfectly fair. And you mentioned teams trying to lose, and there are several of those here in the NFL. But these two teams are not 465, 466. Houston and Baltimore. Baltimore, 4.5 point favorite out there, kind of split across the market. Total of 49 for this one. Baltimore off of a controlled scrimmage win against Cincinnati. Houston off of a bye. So both of these teams in pretty good shape coming into this one. What do you think? I mean, I think at first glance, people are going to say that four looks kind of cheap, but I mean, you got to give Houston credit. They played very well this year.
No doubt. And Baltimore, if they're going to have a letdown spot after beating New England, it just tells you how, horrific the Bengals are. You know what? All the hype, right? Jackson and Watson and up and down the field. I like the game under the total. And I think in a weird way, the benefit is that both Houston and Baltimore's defense practice against guys of the similar ilk. That can tuck it and run. Now, I'm sure Watson or Jackson are not tucking it and running so much in practice, but I think both of these defenses, try to put a spy on the mobile quarterbacks, and it looks like it on paper. You say, oh, it's a track meet. I got a funny feeling this is really played like a playoff game, and I don't think Houston wants to get into a track meet with them. Now, and Baltimore's defense is a lot better at home than it is on the road.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to have any part of this game. I mean, I think, I think the initial impression for a lot of people is going to be, man, this line looks really low at four, given what Baltimore has done here with the win over New England. Everyone said, oh, it's a flat spot for them against Cincinnati, and it wound up being anything. But I think this line is fair. I think this line is completely accurate. I think if it moved down to 3.5, I wouldn't be surprised. If it moved back up to 4.5 market wide, I wouldn't be surprised there either. I think this is just a very good football game. And I understand the desire for people out there to have action on games that they're going to watch. I totally get it. You know why you want to watch that game? Because it's going to be really good. It's going to be really competitive. Maybe those aren't the best games to bet. So I think it's a game that I'm just going to stay completely far away from and maybe find out something about how Houston does defensively without Watt in a game where they could very much use him, and how Baltimore's secondary does against a very good passing attack, because they've played some, solid passing attacks, but none that are really as explosive as Houston's. New England is a lot of controlled move the chain stuff. Seattle is a lot of improvising with Russ. This is a different kind of pass attack for Baltimore to run into. We may see these teams play each other down the line, but I think this is also a pretty decent indicator if Baltimore plays against Kansas City again, what adjustments they make defensively, particularly in the secondary.
You know what, Ben? Are we overthinking this? Just take the points. Maybe. Take the points. Because think about it. Houston could have beat New Orleans in the opener when Breeze was healthy. Great game, 30-28. All right? They lost to Indy, a division game. close game on the road, and they lost to Carolina in a backyard alley fight, 16-10. Well, turns out Carolina's not that bad. So their losses are to the Saints, the Panthers, and the Colts, who had Brissett at the time. Don't think about what you saw last week. So their three losses were to three pretty good teams. And then last year, they won nine in a row. Adam, I don't think we give Houston near enough credit. They had a nine-game winning streak last year, and the three games they lost, they're dead. They're in every game. Take the 4 points. What are we? We're overthinking this.
We could be, and I'll be interested to see where that line movement goes here as we go throughout the week as well. Big slate tonight in the NHL, Brian. Anything catching your eye here on the ice?
Oh, let's dive through this. Yeah, I had a couple of the Nashville and Vancouver. I think, Vancouver is an exciting team, still kind of learning their way. But Nashville is a sneaky goal-scoring team now. So I like that game to go over this total of six. And here we go, pal. I got a call yesterday. I'm like, well, thanks, but where was the call Saturday? The first has been rolled out. Edmonton's moms are on the trip with them.
Ooh.
And they won their first game on the trip at Anaheim, 6-2. And of course, that one goes by the boards. The hard part is finding out, getting it on the front end of this thing. And Edmonton is at San Jose, plus $1.20. San Jose's a dog's breakfast. But Edmonton's moms are on the trip, and it's an angle. If you bet it blind all year long, dad's trips, mom's trip, whatever you want to call it, you are going to win a lot more than you're going to lose. And more often than not, the team you're betting on is a plus price. So don't have to go any further than that, do we?
No, I don't think so. I love the moms and dad's trip angle. And like you said, man, that's the hard part is trying to find out. I think Columbus already had theirs, and I didn't even know about it. It was like mid to late October or something like that. So it is hard to find these things. But, man, when you find them, you got to play on them. And I'll say this, man, also, too, not to go too deep on that game, but as much as I love Alexander Ovechkin, and I have ever since watching him taunt the U.S. bench in the World Juniors, which is crazy to say as an American hockey player myself, but Connor McDavid is, he might be the best player since Gretzky or Lemieux. He is absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, it's, in TV's TV, and I'm perfectly content watching a game on TV, but it's amazing when you're at the rink and you watch these guys play. It's just, you're sitting there going, it's like a video game. And McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon, when they turn and take that first stride, it's like they're shot out of a cannon. It is so eye-popping when you're there in person. And just in relation to all the guys, you're watching all these guys, and man, they're all fast, man. And then all of a sudden, there are these two guys. They're like, oh, my God. It's like the other guys are wearing rollerblades, and they got ice skates on. It's unbelievable. Yeah, no, he's amazing.
It is crazy. Well, we'll transition over to golf, but again, try to do everything you can on social media, Google searches, whatever, to find the moms or dad's trip. Great betting angle. We'll see how Edmonton does here tonight.
And real quick, you can find it. You become a victim of the time, with college basketball starts, to be hunting and searching. So social media, the beat reporters. But if you're really diving into this, it's a simple formula. You got to look at teams. I've done four or five teams where I'm going, it's got to be here, and then I've made notes, pay attention, read up on them. But basically, you're looking for a two-game road trip because they're not going to take the dads or the moms. They're not taking them with them on a three- or four-game road trip. It's usually a two-day hop with a day off, maybe 2 days off in between, so they get to have a family day in the city they go. And usually, they're pretty cool destinations. The hot ones are Florida, the Tampa, Florida swing. Nashville has become one of the hot ones, and Vegas is the other one. So there's your starting point. Look for two-day junkets that are going to Florida, Nashville, or Vegas. That's generally where they go, although Edmonton went to Anaheim and San Jose, so that shoots that one in the water.
Yeah, I was actually looking because Chicago plays Vegas and Nashville this week. And I thought, oh, damn, that would be a perfect one, you know, for all the reasons that you just mentioned. But I don't see anything about it anywhere. So I'm looking. I'm digging. I'm trying to find them. And we'll do the best we can here to mention them. Make sure you follow Brian Blessing on Twitter, too, at Brian Blessing. I'm sure when you see it, you may mention something about it on social media, too.
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking here. Is this a two-game trip for Chicago? I'm checking real quick.
Chicago. Yeah, two games. I think 2 days off in each city, too, if they wanted it.
Well, boy, I'll tell you, I'm going to start reading Chicago papers right now because that one just makes, wow. It's guys. I'll tell you one thing. I don't know it for a fact, but it sure makes sense to me that this is it.
It does. Yeah, I don't know. I looked and I just Google searched it while you were talking there, and I don't see anything about it. But yeah, we're going to try and find these because they are very, very good angles, to say the least. Whether it's the dads or the moms, it doesn't really matter. All right, so I'm freezing. I know you've been complaining about being cold out there in Vegas too. So let's go to Mexico here for the Mayacoba Golf Classic. Pretty interesting event. Not a great field. A lot of the star players, you know, just played the Asian swing. They're going to lay low here for a little bit. But we've got a pretty decent field. Victor Hovland, Jason Day, Matt Kuchar, Billy Horschel, Tony Finau, Joaquin Niemann, Abraham Answers played very well here of late. Anybody you're looking at here in down in Mexico?
Well, you just gave the answer to Abraham Answer. I mean, the guy's in good form. He's going to have incredible support. Abraham Answer 30-1. It'll be interesting to see how they treat Matt Kuchar after the. Yeah, he should be running around, you know, throwing $100 bills out as he's walking down the fairway. How he'll be treated after the thing where he didn't tip the guy last year, yeah, that circus act down there. But Abraham Answer certainly fits the bill for me, and there are a couple of guys in the 60-1 range I'd take a look at. Brian Gay's in good form at 60-1, but the one guy is Pat Perez. Perez was playing great golf. He was here in Vegas. And it was in contention in Sunday morning of the final round. He slipped and fell. He pulled a Dustin Johnson at the Masters. And he actually contended, but he kind of faltered at the tail end. But he was really sore. He fell. He hurt his shoulder or his back. But then he went right to Asia. And he was like an automatic fade. I mean, you kidding me? The guy's sore and hurt, and he's flying to Asia. So, you know, he was a fade job over there on the premise that, you know, whatever was ailing him is behind him. Pat Perez is in really good form, and Pat Perez is also one of these guys. This fall series and then in the California swing, Pat Perez is dangerous, and then he disappears after, you know, March. So Pat Perez at 60-1 is a guy I take a look at. And there's another one, my friend, and that's the Nedbank Challenge, and that is in South Africa. And by the way, the tournament this past week was amazing. The European Tour event, a six-man playoff. Tyrrell Hatton wins the playoff. As they're interviewing him, and you know him, he's a nut bar, right? He's a powder cake. He lipped out. He missed an eight-footer to win a thing on the fourth or fifth playoff hole. And then the Schwab guy misses a three-footer. Hatton wins the thing. And he's talking. He's just like, yeah, you won $1.6 million. This is a $2 million purse, by the way, for the winner. This is a ridiculously high-paying tournament. But Tyrrell Hatton is standing there in the interview, and they're talking to him. He's, well, you know, I'm glad. You know, I've had some off-course issues, and his wrist has been bothering me, so I'm taking next week off. But they're talking about, yeah, the money you made, you went from 60 to 30 in the world rankings. And he goes, yeah. He goes, well, he goes, none of that means nothing to me. He goes, I am excited because my favorite day of the year is when I go to the postal, he said. When I go to the postal. And I get the invitation to the Masters. I'm running for the phone. I'm diving for the phone and get the phone app and bet Tyrrell Hatton 150-1 to win the Masters. I mean, the guy's 30 seconds removed from winning this tournament, and he's talking about the Masters. I'm like, sold. So you always got to be looking ahead. But in this one, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Louis Oosthuizen, of course, home, and he's playing great. But he's never won here. Tommy Fleetwood's 11-1. Tommy Fleetwood is a train wreck right now. He, you know, fade him in matchups. Stenson 12-1 contends. He doesn't kick the door down. Matthew Fitzpatrick's in really good form. I also have a bet on him at about 150-1 to win the Masters. So 14-1 on Matthew Fitzpatrick. There's an interesting subplot going on with the Kurt Kitayama kid who was in the playoff this past week. He's an American kid. He's at 28 to 1. Robert McIntyre is at 22 to 1. They're in the race to Dubai. These two guys are, it's a horse race to be rookie of the year. Both of these guys are playing great golf. But you got to look at South Africans in here. Christian Bezuidenhout is 50 to 1. Don't giggle. The guy's playing really good golf. South African. The Englishman, Paul Waring, is a danger at 33 to 1. But the other guy you got to take a look at is Justin Harding. And he's a South African, and he's playing good golf. And I'm absolutely stupefied that Harding is in the 50 to 1 range. So I think there's some real good price plays in the European Tour event as well.
There you go. A lot of good golf insights there from Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people check out those two shows, Brian?
Thanks, Adam. KSHP.com. The shows air live noon to 2 Pacific time. The shows are archived at sportsbookradio.com. And we got you covered both sides of the counter with the top sportsbook directors here in Vegas throughout the course of the week. And then Vegas Hockey Hotline, we have phenomenal hockey guests from around the hockey world. And a lot of talk about the Golden Knights, but we talk about all things NHL and from a betting perspective. So, and like you mentioned, follow me on Twitter, Brian Blessing. We get you the word out there on the videos we do for Bang the Book and all the cool things that are going on. And we love doing this with you every Tuesday, bud.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for joining me here once again. Again, that is Brian Blessing, at Brian Blessing on Twitter, sportsbookradio.com, KSHP.com for his daily shows there, Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Go scrape some ice off the windshield. I think I'll...
I
think I'm going to take this sweatshirt off now.
There you go. I'm not going anywhere. It's cold out there. All right. We go from talking with Brian Blessing to talking with professional handicapper Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com about college football and college basketball. Ralph, how's it going today, man?
Going great, Adam. 1 week down. Exciting time. You know, I love November. You know, I had a horrible start to the college basketball season with an offer my first night. But, you know, that's part of the business. And you know, if that offer were in January, it'd be a different story. So, you know, move past that. College basketball, some surprises, obviously. You know, we'll talk about some of the changes with the three-point line and the unders. But really, you know, this time for me, there's no question November is my favorite month in football. You get the rivalries, you get the revenge situations. You know, you have people that are overranking teams and underranking teams because of injuries and previous performances. So again, November college football to me, if I had to pick one month to do anything, obviously it would probably be March Madness and college hoops, but followed by November college football.
Well, let's start with college football here. And, you know, as we're kind of talking through this time of the year, I mean, there's so much going on. And I even mentioned this Sunday night in my updated power ratings over at bangthebook.com that you still want to have your power ratings. You still want to refer back to them. But there are so many other considerations and factors here at this time of the year that I'm finding that, you know, between having a lot of my lines close to what the market has and just everything that's going on, I'm using my power ratings a lot less.
Well, you know, I have found that it's helped me. I have never published mine in the past, you know, so it was sort of a haphazard way. I mean, I would always update them, but I didn't look at them religiously. But now that I post mine as well on Sunday mornings at Wager Talk, I find myself actually going through and doing the games. And, you know, there's clearly some value. Last week, I had Minnesota as a 1-point favorite against Penn State. It ended up being one of my top plays. And I equate that to watching so much Big Ten football, because when you're changing your power ratings and it's the eye test that you're basing it on, well, I don't care what the score was. I don't care what the yardage was. The eye test, I might move someone up two or down two just for passing the eye test. When you aren't watching the games, you're then reading a story, looking at the box scores, trying to analyze it and make your power adjustments. So, you know, I think I wasn't swayed in the Big Ten having Minnesota that high and Penn State lower than others because I watched so much of that. But, you know, other leagues where I don't get to watch as much, you know, the Sun Belt and, you know, CUSA games, you know, I'm basing it on the power ratings, and those I find are like you said, very close to the Vegas numbers at this point in the season.
I think that that's what's tough is, you know, a lot of my, not to say that I don't watch college football on Saturdays, I do, but a lot of my power ratings adjustments are based on the closing line that was out there in the market and then the box score study. And yeah, you do miss an element when you're not able to actually watch the game, watch the teams. And also too, you know, you may miss out on something that way. And, you know, my line was Minnesota plus five last week, so I was still lower than the market, not in the position that you were, and obviously Minnesota wins the game outright there. But, you know, I think it's really hard at this time of the year too, because, again, this is one of those years in college football where everybody's kind of been beating everybody. You've got the elites, the awfuls, and then everyone in the middle seems largely interchangeable outside of the top 15 and the bottom 15 to some degree. But that's what's been making it difficult for me, is that a lot of times I'll be on the Circa opener or be very close to it, or the line will move in my direction and something just absolutely crazy happens, and then I don't know how to adjust to it.
Yeah, to me, I mean, my nemesis this year has been the Big 12. It seems like I am on the wrong side of Oklahoma State every week. You know, Oklahoma State either pulls an upset or gets upset. And that's, to me, it's been the Big 12 this year. They are basically the microcosm, as you talked about, with college football, with all the middle teams beating each other up. So to me, I completely agree. You know, we have elites and we have horrible, horrible bads. I have, I tweeted out earlier this week, I have Ohio State right now at 105, and if they were playing at home, that would be 109. I have UMass at 31. So I have I would make Ohio State a 78-point favorite against UMass at home. Shows you the top and bottoms of college football this season.
Out of curiosity, let me throw this at you, because I was kind of looking at this on Sunday night when I was working on these, and I didn't really love where I had these. Ohio State's number one in my power ratings as well. I've got them rated a 99.5. I have them -2.5 against LSU, -3 against Alabama, and -3.5 against Clemson. Am I off?
Well, I think you're right, because they posted some mythical numbers. I actually have Ohio State 4.5 over LSU, and I have them 6.5 over Alabama. Clemson, I have them only 1.5 points. So to me, you know, I went back and watched a couple Clemson games I had taped, and they are passing the eye test. Granted, you're only playing who you're playing, and you look at their schedule and, you know, you can say it's not good. You know, in my college football stat guide that I do, Clemson has played the number 71 schedule. So that's pitiful to be an ACC team. But, you know, when you have a 300 plus yard edge in almost every game, each of the last five games, you're doing all you have to do. The defense is getting back. Trevor Lawrence is someone no one's talking about. So to me, they're really the dangerous team that's going to just run through the rest of the schedule. And people are going to say, well, they haven't played anyone, but it's so much different being an experienced team that's been there and done that, and it's a national champion that hasn't played anyone, compared to, let's say, if Baylor ran the table and we could say they haven't played anyone with the exception of Oklahoma this week. So I actually have Clemson number 2 right now. Yeah, I know LSU has beaten all those opponents, but eye test to me still has them up there.
Well, and just to sort of follow up here, right, and again, maybe I made it sound like I'm just completely discrediting and discounting my power ratings. That's not what I'm doing, but it's simply that, you know, we talk about motivation in bowl season, and I don't think people really realize the degree to which motivation matters in mid-November. You've got the teams that we've talked about already the last couple of weeks that, you know, picked up a seventh loss. They're not going to a bowl game. You've got teams that, you know that their coaches are probably going to get fired, or at the very least they're on the hot seat. You've got some teams that maybe could get to 6 wins and go to a bowl, but maybe they don't even want to, because it's been a season where, you know, they're not getting where they want to go. You know, Washington was a team that could have fallen into that last week, but they just dominated defensively against Oregon State, where they're a team that's not going to reach the expectations that they have as a program, but they still wind up showing up in that game. But that's kind of more of what I mean here, is that you can still use your power ratings to get out in front of the market, but outside of that, I mean, I use them as a frame of reference here on the show, but I'm looking more at, you know, is this team going to show up and want to play? I'm trying to play psychologist here, which also can be a little bit, you know, difficult to do, because There's no quantifying whether a team wants to show up or not, and really there's no way of actually knowing.
Bubble burst is one of the biggest motivating factors when you get to November. Teams that, you know, perhaps lost their first game, or even as important, lost their second game. So how teams react is exactly what you have to look for. And power ratings at this point in time are like anything else. You know, I, for those that follow me on Twitter, you guys know that I tweet a ton of crap. I don't call it, it's not crap, but I mean, it's trends and angles and things that you're not basing a play on. And people think I'm a technical handicapper. I'm nowhere near a technical handicapper. It's just the niche. There's things I like looking up. And if I find things, and even if I don't find things, I share those things because I want to know how a team does off an upset win or loss. Even if it's not a 60% record, someone else has that question. So I tweet it. So people tend to think that that's the way I handicap. But power ratings are like trends. They're like angles. They're like matchups. They're like situations. You're doing a set of positives. You're doing a set of negatives. If there's more positives than negatives, it's potential to be a play. So, you know, I agree. There's times where my power rating may have one team a 2-point favor, and I go against that power rating because of the situation or because of the matchups. And then there's other times like last week where Minnesota had a 6-point edge over the power rating or an 8-point edge. And I did use them, but I also liked them, obviously, for the reasons that I had Penn State down in the power rating. So, completely agree. It's just part of the technique, and it gets less and less important. And in fact, I don't even use my power ratings when we get to the bowls, because then basically all you're handicapping is motivation and then looking at how the teams match up after that.
Well, unfortunately, couldn't do Monday's segments with Kyle Hunter. We're going to try to do those later in the week here on Bang the Book Radio. But because we couldn't do our college football first look on Monday, didn't get a chance to talk about any of these weeknight games here, so we'll try to do a little bit of that here, looking specifically at the Tuesday night game, just to get something out there for the day of show listeners. May God have mercy on the souls of whoever is betting Akron tonight at home against Eastern Michigan. That line's coming down a little bit. But Western Michigan and Ohio is an interesting one, because the line suggests that Western Michigan, maybe as much as a 4.5 type favorite at home in Kalamazoo, now laying a road price in Athens against Ohio, but this game, Northern Illinois and Toledo tomorrow night, they just kind of illustrate that the MAC just has really no good teams, some maybe slightly above average teams, a lot of average and a lot of bad.
Well, to put how bad the MAC is in perspective this year, if any of you have watched a Miami of Ohio game, you have not been impressed. Yet I have them power rated number 2 in the conference because of what they've done the last couple of weeks, beating Northern Illinois, Kent State, and Ohio. So, you know, Western Michigan is my top-rated power team in the conference, and at least they have some people on offense. I mean, Levante Bellamy can run the ball 1,200 yards, 6.1 yards per carry. And I do lean with them. Just a note for those that are listening day of, both of these games got moved up time-wise. ESPN, the MAC, asked them to move it up because of snow. Adam, you probably can tell us it's snowing or it's going to snow later today. Which is it that they move these games up? Akron game is going to be affected by snow. It's not supposed to reach down to Ohio to bother the Western Michigan game, but I look at Western Michigan, and I love a team that can run the ball, obviously, when weather gets a little inclement as well. You know, they're averaging over 220 yards. They're averaging 5.7 yards per carry. And I just don't see the OU defense being able to shut them down. The Bobcats have been run over the last couple weeks. They're allowing over 5.4 yards per carry. So I have the better rush D against the worst. I have the better rush offense against the worst rush D. And Western Michigan's rush D, not good, but clearly better or equal to what Ohio can put on the field. So, you know, with that being said, I do have a lean with Western Michigan tonight.
Yeah, there's a little bit of snow in the area. Some places getting more than others. Northeast Ohio is getting it quite a bit more, but it's going to be 11 degrees for a low tonight in Akron, which is another reason they moved it up, because of the extreme cold. Not that anyone's going to go to this game anyway. It'll be friends and family night there at InfoCision Stadium, but wind could be a little bit of a factor early in the game as well. And also a factor is that Akron's offense hasn't scored a touchdown since September 28th. As far as Western Michigan and Ohio go, I agree. Western Michigan can run the ball, and I don't remember Ohio's defense ever being this bad. I mean, they are awful. So I'd really have to look Western Michigan or nothing here. Ohio's very dependent on one player on offense. That's quarterback Nathan Rourke. I'd have to be Western Michigan or nothing there. But again, you know, these Maction games, I try to mention them on the show, even though they're not attractive matchups at all, because people are going to play them in this standalone capacity, and they may not know too much about these teams. That's why we try to mention them as much as we can here on the show. A couple more recognizable teams here on Thursday night in the ACC, North Carolina and Pitt. This line's down to Pitt -4. And what do you think about the line move here? And what do you think about the handicap, Ralph?
Pitt's a team that, you know, I was on earlier this year. I was very happy backing them. I had a few wins with them just basically because of their defense. I truly believed from early what I read and what I saw. You know, Pat Narduzzi has accomplished what D'Antonio wanted at Michigan State. He's got a team that plays good defense, that gets a lot of sacks. You know, the only problem is Kenny Pickett's made too many mistakes with a 9-8 ratio. But I'll tell you what, very few teams this season have impressed me as much as North Carolina and what Mack Brown has done. You know, opening the season with wins against South Carolina, Miami, and then you think they're done. Losses to Wake Forest and App State, and then Clemson by a point. Then they go beat Georgia Tech, and then they could have beaten Virginia Tech. Then they beat Duke. I mean, they've been in every game. They haven't had a loss by over 6 points. Their pocket's been decently clean. My concern is the Virginia Tech game and the Wake Forest game, two road games. Sam Howell got sacked a total of 11 times. We know Pittsburgh is a top five team as far as defensive sacks goes. They have 40 sacks, and they're sacking their opponents 13% of the time when they go back to pass. But 9 sacks against Syracuse, 6 sacks against Ohio, and 6 sacks against Delaware show you that Pitt is a good bully when they're playing quality foes. Miami of Florida, not a quality foe, but only 2 sacks. Duke, not a quality foe, but only 3 sacks. I went back and forth on this game, and originally I leaned with the under, and I thought that would be my opinion I give out, but I think North Carolina still can get it done. I mean, they have 4 wins. They play Mercer next week. So, you know, Mack Brown's in the locker room going, guys, listen, you know, you don't want to count your chickens before you hatch, but they're counting Mercer as a win. So the Mercer's a win. So you got to beat Pittsburgh on the road, or you got to beat NC State on the road. Let's go and do it. We outgained Virginia last week. We outgained Virginia Tech when we lost. We outgained Appalachian State when you lost. We're that good of a team. We have a great freshman in Sam Howell who has a 26-5 ratio and playing well. We have a rush attack with Javonte Williams. We've got quality wide receivers. And we got a defense that keeps us in the game. They've given up some yards, but they've been a very good red zone defense. So both opinions on North Carolina and the under.
I like North Carolina a little bit here, too. My line is 2.5 in the game, so I got a little bit of line value there with the key number of 3, obviously, in play. I'd certainly like to get 4.5 as opposed to 4 here. But something that really caught me by surprise here, you know, Pitt, as you mentioned, top 5 in sacks. You know who has the same number of sacks in conference play as Pitt does? North Carolina. Both teams with 19 sacks in ACC play. So the Tar Heels defense has been doing a little bit better getting after the passer. They're off a bye with 2 first-year coordinators in Phil Longo and Jay Bateman. Love Bateman. Love Longo. I think North Carolina's the side here in this game. The worry that I have is it's Pittsburgh in November. It's going to be chilly. It's probably going to be uncomfortable for Sam Howell, who probably hasn't played in a ton of cold weather. That would be my one concern here. I think North Carolina's the side in this one. I really do. And like you said, I mean, they're competitive in every game. And Pitt does not generate explosive plays on offense. In fact, they're very poor offensively in yards per play. I don't see them getting margin here. And North Carolina's got a knack for hanging around. Maybe they just go ahead and hang around and win this one.
Is 109 out of 130 teams bad,
Adam? That would be bad.
That's again, that's from the Stat Compare. And again, it's something that I vitally suggest you guys check out. Pittsburgh right now, 5.0 yards per play on offense. That's number 109. I do want to rebut one thing you said, Adam, not really a rebuttal, but just going a little bit deeper into the stats. You know, North Carolina and Pittsburgh both do have 19 sacks in conference play. The difference being North Carolina's opposing quarterbacks have thrown 166 times. Pittsburgh only 89. So Pittsburgh has 19 sacks and 89 pass attempts, while North Carolina has 19 and 166, almost double the amount of opportunities to get a sack.
No, that's an excellent point. That's a very, very good point there. And of course, my counter, and you did mention this already, that Pitt had the 9 sacks against Syracuse, who has one of the worst offensive lines in the country. So,
oh God, no question.
So, you know, I mean, but that's the thing here about college football this year is that you can poke holes in literally everything about every single team because it's, they didn't play anybody or, you know, they padded their stats against this team, didn't play well against that team. Like that applies to every team in college football this year, which does make it really, really challenging. You know, I mean, you got so many teams that you can say, oh, they didn't play anybody or, you know, they played one game and they caught that team in a bad spot. And there are qualifiers to everything this year and it makes it really hard.
Oh, there's no question. You know, I'm going to give a shout out to, you know, to my old boss, Phil Steele, because, you know, I still use philsteele.com. And I am not promoting it at all, but I think it's $59 for the year. And if you go on the Phil Steele Plus and you get it, when he has a stat logs, you see what the team did above or below the average of the team and what they've done to the season. And while we could say Pittsburgh may have got some people on good days, I will say this. Pittsburgh defense has held 5 of their opponents to a season low. So when you're looking at a stat box, we know 300 yards may be good for some teams. Hell, if you're playing Oklahoma, holding them to 500 yards is a great day. But if you see that the team has held the opponents to a season low, you're putting everything in perspective that you know that's good, regardless of what that number is on the box score.
Well, with that, we jump down to game 381-382, and that is Oklahoma and Baylor, and we'll see if Baylor can hold Oklahoma down. From a spot standpoint, it's bad both ways in this game. Baylor off the triple overtime game against TCU, Oklahoma off of surviving Iowa State, getting that stop on that two-point conversion play. Are you surprised to see Baylor getting double digits here at home in Waco?
Absolutely. But I've also played against Baylor a few times thinking they were overranked with who they've played. You know, Baylor right now has played the number 58 schedule, but that's thanks to their last 3 games that actually moved them up. They had one of those schedules like Clemson where they were down low. To me, you know, I just watch Baylor and I'm never wowed by them. But what do? They do what Matt Rhule did at Temple. Sometimes you just win games and you hang in games and you don't make many mistakes and, you know, you don't lose the turnover battle. You know, Baylor's plus 6 in turnovers on the year. Oklahoma, on the flip side, is minus 4 turnovers per year. So, you know, I look at that. And the first thing I'm going to go back, and because I knew we were going to talk about this game, I started looking in and I did 2 tweets that relate directly to this game. The first is talking about Lincoln Riley and Oklahoma's offense. If you go back and if you look at the number one team in the NCAA in offensive yards per play from 2010 through 2016, those teams that led were Hawaii, Baylor, Georgia, Florida State, Marshall, North Carolina, and Western Kentucky. The best any team did was Florida State in 2013 at 7.7 yards per play. We get to Oklahoma, 2017, 8.3 yards per play. 2018, 8.6 yards per play. 2019, 9.3 yards per play. Okay, run a play, get a first down. Run a play, get a first down. That's a pretty productive offense. And then even more impressive is I also put in the tweet, what the margin was against the number two team. So how far were you clear? We've talked about, well, if you're number one, we don't know how good you were with number one because there's no one ahead of you. If you're number 30, how bad were you because there's no one below you? Well, the closest margin from 2010 through 2016 was Marshall in 2014. Now, excuse me, the biggest margin was Marshall. They had a 0.25-yard edge over number two. So Marshall averaged 7.6 yards per play. The number two team averaged 7.35. The margin, the edge over number two, 2017, 0.83, 2018, 0.84. The margin this year, they are 1.54 yards ahead of the next best team in college football. So, you know, like Lincoln Riley or not, like they get a transfer every year that can win the Heisman, like them or not, just a hats off to an incredible offensive mind.
To say the least. And, you know, I've been hoping that maybe he'll be the next Browns head coach, get to work with Baker Mayfield again. But that's the question here is, you know, can Baylor keep up? And I think with the line movement that we've seen so far, the answer to that question in some people's minds is no. I mean, this is an Oklahoma team, as you mentioned, over a yard and a half per play better than anybody else. Baylor is 16th in the country, and they're more than 2.5 yards per play on offense behind Oklahoma. Obviously, the Oklahoma defense has been under the microscope. Baylor's defense has been very good, but you just mentioned they haven't played a very good schedule of teams. Also, I think when you watched Baylor last week, and I've seen some people talking about this, a lot of people seem to think that Charlie Brewer is hurt. A lot of people think he is nowhere near 100%. He damn well better be if you want this Baylor offense to keep up with Oklahoma. So I think that is the worry here. I think the worry in this game is you have to ask yourself, you know, how many points does Baylor score? Because the expectation is that Oklahoma exposes that defense a little bit. That's not to say I'm going to play the game, but I'm just kind of reading through what we've seen in the line so far.
Yeah, again, originally I thought I would like Oklahoma, but I've started to come back and lean with the dog a little bit. When you look at Oklahoma, you know, they win to start off the season against Houston. They blow out South Dakota. They crush UCLA when UCLA's offense was completely non-existent. They blow out Texas Tech, and then they beat Kansas by 25. Okay, your toughest competitor in that is Texas Tech, and that's not really competition because you're at home. Texas, you win by 7. Kansas State, you lose by 7. Iowa State, you win by 1. It just shows you that defense has given up their share. Against Texas, that defense against Texas's offense, which isn't great, allowed 25 first downs. Against a Kansas State offense we know isn't good. I mean, they're winning and they're serviceable. 24 first downs. Against Iowa State at home, 26 first downs. So the only road game you played was Kansas State. You had Texas neutral, you had Iowa State at home. So I do have clear concerns for that Oklahoma offense. And then you add in motivation. And, you know, I told you I did two tweets on this game. Here's the other tweet, and it makes a lot of sense to me. You know, you want to talk about a team that feels disrespected. Well, since 1982, I looked up undefeated teams that were home dogs. I'm not even talking about double-digit home dogs. I'm just talking about an undefeated team that's a home dog from week 10 or on. So you've gone through your season. You're at least 8-0 or 9-0 if you had multiple buys. Well, those undefeated home dogs have gone 15-4-1 against the spread, 79%. Does it make sense? Absolutely. You have an undefeated team riled up, ready to go at home. You're getting points. You're totally disrespected. People aren't giving you any credit. Everyone's blowing smoke up the visitors' butt because they are a double or they're a road favorite against an undefeated foe. So, you know, to me, that makes sense. Baylor makes sense. I love Matt Rhule. You know, I am not going to be on any side or any total in this game, but if you said, you know, Ralph, here's $5, I would bet a fun Baylor over parlay and just watch and enjoy.
I mean, I've got this one lined in the 5.5-6 range. So, I mean, from a line value standpoint, I'm probably looking at Baylor. I don't know if I'm going to play it here. Cause like I said, I do have those worries about Charlie Brewer and his health, but fascinating game. Absolutely fascinating game. And the funny thing is we've had a lot of these top 10, top 15 matchups this year with double-digit favorite prices. So I guess we'll see how this one winds up working out. Let's transition over to the college basketball side here, Ralph. Start of the season, we're a week in. Some pretty interesting developments here so far, in particular when looking at totals.
Absolutely. You know, I don't know if it's an anomaly. I don't know if it's the three-point line getting moved back. But last November, we had 50.6% of the games were over the total. There were 15.49 three-point shots made. The winning team averaged 37.2. The losing team averaged 30.1. This year, again, only a week in, we're 61.1% to the under. So blindly betting every game under so far this year, you've catched 61%. There's been 0.7 fewer 3 points made, and the percentages are down 0.9% for the winning team, down 1.6% for the losing team. Now, let's remember, when we talk about November, that is going to incorporate a lot of these tournaments, Thanksgiving week. So you're starting to play in unique settings. You're going to start playing back-to-back games. You're going to start having tired legs. So the November analysis of last year may not be a fair comparison of week one, but it is of note that, again, a 61.1% start to the under, blindly betting them, is something you have to pay attention to.
And it is really interesting, too, because I don't know if you have any research on this. You can correct me if I'm wrong here, but generally speaking, teams play at a faster tempo in November than they do throughout most of the rest of the season because, as you mentioned, everybody's fresh. Every head coach, and Kyle Hunter's talked about this before on the show, every head coach says before the season, we want to push the tempo, we want to push the pace, we want to score in transition, this and that. As the season goes along, a lot of teams wind up regressing back in terms of their tempo, but usually early on, teams are playing faster. So to hear that it's so heavily slanted toward the under is doubly interesting.
Well, you also have familiarity. You know, once you start getting into conference play, you have teams that are going to play each other multiple times, and you have teams that are familiar with each other, and you're only having to study, you know, part of the team. I am looking at them in over the last 3 years. If you just look at the month of February, games have gone 50.5% to the over, 49.5% to the under. So, you know, right at 50%. Now, the lines makers are also better at making adjustments. Right now, you're not seeing any of those crazy low totals. You know, we used to see 119s with UCF and Cincinnati and some of those Missouri Valley Conference games. You know, we're capping out at 129s because they don't have to go that low yet. And we're also not seeing some of the crazy high overs with teams like FIU that we know are going to race because teams are changing schemes as well. So, you know, the bookmakers get better. Teams are more familiar, and I think we're going to see it trend more towards the median line of 50%.
All right, so I do want to talk about three games here. One of them tonight, Memphis and Oregon out in Portland. Two of them tomorrow for tomorrow's games. We don't have the odds. We'll get Ralph's number on the game, then we can kind of analyze it from there. But this is, you know, multifaceted. I want to talk about some of these teams because they're all very, very interesting. And I also want to peel back some of the layers of what Ralph does when he's handicapping college basketball, how he comes to his decisions, the things that he's looking at, stuff like that. So this game tonight, 8-19, 8-20, Memphis and Oregon. Again, it's going to be called a neutral site, but Portland is 2 hours from Eugene. Memphis is like a 3.5-hour flight from Portland. So Oregon is a 4-point favorite here tonight. Total in this game has come down 145.5. to 144. What do you think about this one tonight, Ralph?
I do like Oregon. And, you know, a lot of it is matchups, and I do look at matchups early. And, you know, I'm going to pull out the respect card as well. We know Memphis has the number one recruiting class in the country. We know they have the best player in the country, at least the person who's probably going to be the number one pick in the draft. But what have they done? They rolled through South Carolina State, and they played an Illinois-Chicago team, which I have in the bottom half of their conference. And what helps when you're Memphis and you're excited and you want to run with Penny Hardaway and these young kids, you're facing a team that's up-tempo like Illinois-Chicago. And what happens? You can run them out and win the game 92-46. Well, I'll tell you what, no one's talking about Oregon. Yeah, they had a couple players go to the NBA, and Oregon had the number three recruiting class in the country. We're talking they got five stars as well. We're also talking about getting a New Mexico transfer who's starting for them. We're also talking about getting UNLV's best player in Justin by far last year, who was a four-star and almost a five-star recruit. We're talking about a team that has been tested, having played Fresno State and Boise State. Yeah, I mean, they're not Kentucky and Duke, but I'll tell you what, your team learns a lot more playing two Mountain West Conference teams that are decent instead of playing South Carolina State and Illinois Chicago. So to me, we have a tested team. We have a team that plays defense. We have a team that's going to be control the tempo. Altman, I'll take over Hardaway all day long as far as a coach goes. Our point guard's back for Oregon. And, you know, again, this doesn't mean anything because we're talking about a freshman class that, you know, has potential to be historically good. You know, we're talking, you know, they're not going to get to the Fab Five level at Michigan or last year's Duke class, but they're going to have a few players that are going to be there. Oregon starting five. I got this from a 247 article, so I want to give credit where it's due. Oregon starting five has scored 2,979 career points. Memphis's starting five have scored 121 career points.
That was the one big thing that I saw, and I did preview this game over at bangthebook.com, so I encourage everyone to go check it out, is that Oregon has a massive experience edge in this game. Now, maybe the talent edge, you could argue, is on Memphis's side, but you just listed a lot of reasons why Oregon is getting disrespected here from their talent level. They've got holdovers, they've got transfers, they've got good freshmen that came in. They've got a really good team themselves. I agree with you. I think this line is light. I maybe don't love it as much as you do, but you know a lot more about college basketball than I do. But as I broke down through this game, I do like Oregon tonight. And what I'll be really interested to see is what this does to the perception of both teams, no matter what happens, because Memphis's non-conference schedule isn't particularly great. Oregon's is quite good. They play Seton Hall. They still play Michigan down the line. Dana Altman scheduled up in the non-conference for the Ducks here. And I'll be curious to see what happens going forward with their perception if they do, you know, win this game by 8 or 10 and cover the number, you know, fairly comfortably.
Well, you know, I'm going to break it down as simple as this. I have Oregon as the better team than Memphis. You know, Memphis has gotten a lot of hype. And the thing about Memphis is some people that don't follow college basketball may not even have known about Memphis. But with the fiasco last week of not eligible and eligible and all over Twitter and all over ESPN, the world all of a sudden knows about Memphis. Memphis was only a top 30 team. This is not an AP top 10 team. Yeah, they're talented, and yes, they're exciting, and yes, they have freshmen, but Oregon was the better team coming in, playing basically at a home neutral setting with an attitude. I think the line's several points off.
All right, so let's go to Wednesday here. And again, we're not going to have odds for these games if we do look ahead, but again, my goal here is to peel back the curtain, show you what Ralph does on a daily basis there in college basketball. We got three real good games coming up here on Wednesday night. We'll highlight two of them, beginning with LSU and VCU. A little road trip here from Baton Rouge up to Richmond for the Tigers as they take on the Rams. How are you seeing this one here? Because you've got the major conference team in LSU and the team in VCU that, you know, comes from a lesser conference but appears to be the better team this year.
Well, you know, let's just start off with my number. I am going to make VCU a 5-point favorite. Now, with that being said, you know, people talk about, oh, well, the reason these two are playing is because Wade left VCU, signed with LSU, and part of the agreement for VCU letting him out of that contract was they either had to pay him $250,000 or schedule a home and home. LSU went to Wade and said, listen, do you want us to pay it out or do you want to go back to VCU? He says, oh, hell no, I want to go to VCU. It's a tough place to play. I have my kids ready. It's going to benefit me. So people are going to say, oh, this team is fired up to play their former coach. I'm going to turn it around and say this former coach is fired up to play his former players, and he knows that personnel pretty damn well. You know, VCU is a bit of a concern for me. Getting by St. Francis on 14 by 14 on last Tuesday wasn't impressive. They struggled against North Texas. I'm going to say this. I'm going to say VCU was clearly looking ahead to facing their former coach in LSU when they struggled against North Texas. North Texas may be a little better than I thought, but I'm giving VCU the benefit of the doubt this year. We'll see if we're right and we'll see if we're wrong. You know, LSU has a lot of pieces they have to replace. I have them as just about equal, but I have VCU as the better team to start off the year. So LSU to me, you know, LSU to me has only played Bowling Green. They struggled. That game was at home. VCU has two games under their belt, which I believe helps them in this third game. And LSU going from a home game against Bowling Green, a game you only won by 9 and didn't cover, to now having to play that first road game in this type of setting. So we'll see what the number opens up and at. I am making my number VCU -5, and we'll know later tonight when they post the numbers on what side I like.
All right, then we go to a different game on Wednesday here, and this is a top 25 matchup. Villanova and Ohio State. I know you were on the Buckeyes last week. They eked out a cover against Cincinnati in a game that you and I texted about a little bit after it happened, but a real good test here for Ohio State, but also this is a real good test for a Villanova team that's lost a lot over the last 2 years.
Absolutely. I have Villanova, you know, as the better team. I think that, you know, Jay Wright has a couple five-star recruits. Now, you know, Villanova, for all those years, you know, when they lost the players to the NBA and they lost four players to the NBA 2 years ago, they weren't like Duke and Kentucky and Kansas, and they weren't able to get those five-star recruits. Jay Wright would get four-star recruits and turn them into very, very good players. Well, this year he actually has two five-star recruits, a pair of guards. The problem is one of them, Brian Antoine, is doubtful to play, so we're not going to see them at their full regimen. Now, normally that would give an edge to Ohio State, but Ohio State's best defender is probably Andre Wesson, the brother of their best player. He's their best defender. He had a fractured eye socket from the Cincinnati game, and he is likely out 3 weeks. So each team is missing an integral part, a starter in their offense, which puts them back to even. You know, I am a fan of this Ohio State team. More likely, I should say, I am a fan of Chris Holtmann. I think this guy is just an elite coach. What he did at Gardner-Webb, taking over 11-win team, getting them to 21 wins 2 years later. What he did keeping the momentum at Butler for three straight years, finishing with a 25-9 record in 2017. But his best job may clearly have been, you know, not the 25-9 first year at Ohio State, that 20-15 record the second year, getting that team to be as competitive they were. And remember, that was with Wesson suspended late in the year for a couple games. So, again, Chris Holtmann is a top five coach in my book. The Big Ten has struggled against good foes. I mean, we saw Iowa get knocked off yesterday. You know, Michigan's got their handfuls today. So the Big Ten is so competitive. They have lost a couple early games. But if I get Ohio State at home in this situation, which impressed me against Cincinnati, they were down 7. It showed gumption coming back, taking that lead, and thankfully covering for me in the second half. I'm making Ohio State 2 in this. You know, again, I have Villanova, the little better team, with a guard being out. I have Ohio State right behind him with Wesson being out. Home field edge about 3. So I'm making Villanova, you know, maybe a 1.5 point team better on a neutral. And I'm going to make my line Ohio State -2. And again, we'll see where that line comes out.
Any other systems or trends or angles or anything that you're looking to take advantage of here early on in the season?
Well, you know, there's a couple things I looked at. And, you know, one thing I want to mention tonight, again, we talked about those unders. And, you know, one game for those listening day of, I want to remind people the Minnesota Golden Gophers are a slow-paced team. Butler, not not as slow as turtle pace, but they're certainly, they're in the middle of the road. Minnesota is 0-12-1 over under as an away dog. And in those 13 games where none of them have gone over the total, they've gone under by 11 points per game. And that's an important thing to look at as well. When you're looking at trends and angles, if you're looking at a team that is 7-3 and those seven games covered by 1 or 2 points where a basket either way could have changed that to a 3-7 ATS record, that is much weaker than a record that has a strong differential from the cover. So again, Minnesota, very strong team as an away dog to the under. They are playing Butler tonight. And then game two instances, Adam, all this applies to is game two of the season. If a home team covered game one by 21 or more points at home, and then now they're at home game two. So game one, you were at home, you covered by 21 points or more, you probably got deep into your bench, you blew out an opponent, and now you're home again. Since 2006, those teams have gone 25-7-1, 78% against the spread. That's Arkansas against North Texas tonight and Duquesne against Lamar. And then one more game two situation. If you lost game one as a home favorite, I'm going to quiz you here, Adam. Do you bounce back strong or is it a fade because you're continuing to play poorly?
I think it's a fade because you're probably a little bit overrated.
Yeah, well, that's it. Since 2006, if you lose game one of the college football season, college basketball season as a home favorite, you've only gone 44-64-1, 40.7% against the spread. And even worse, if you lost game one as a home favorite and now you're a home dog, you've only gone 11-23 against the spread, 32%. That's going to be Northwestern. They're going to be a home dog tomorrow against Providence. So one of those is tonight saying play on Arkansas and Duquesne. One of them tomorrow would be fade Northwestern against Providence.
Ralph Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. And again, make sure you follow him on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Tweets out a lot of phenomenal information. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Just clicking away. Everything you guys are accustomed to. Weekly college football. The preseason guide is still there. Again, to me, I keep looking at it through December, just knowing how a team finished last season, where they're starting this year, where others have them ranked, where their power ratings were, and ATS situations. NBA fans, I'm going to be starting the NBA daily stat sheet. It's a quick one-page sheet to look at teams. And I don't think I'm going to get to the college basketball weekly guide that I do and so many people love until the college football season is over. So look for that about the first week of December.
Once again, make sure you follow Ralph on Twitter at CalSportsLV and check out all the work being done over at wagertalk.com as well. Ralph, we appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, stay warm. It's only 72 here in Vegas today, so we got sweaters on.
God, I hate all of you. I hate every one of you that lives out there in Las Vegas. And that's Ralph Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. Ran a little bit long here with today's show. Maybe I'm just subconsciously trying to make up for not doing a Monday show. We will be back Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday here of this week. Again, we'll try to work Kyle Hunter in at some point here this week, trying to just make sure that fits in with his schedule. But make sure you join us tomorrow for another edition of Bang the Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.